Welcome to the Visceral Voice Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Schneider. Through this podcast, I aim to bring you the most current, up-to-date research on voice science, function, pain science, movement, and everything in between. I am on a quest to learn everything I can about the living, breathing body and its intricate connection to the voice. This podcast documents the continuation of my learning and my experience as a professional singer, a nutritional consultant, a movement specialist, and a manual therapist. Join us as we strive to provide current, knowledgeable, creative, and compassionate information to help you restore, regain, and create happiness and success on your vocal journey. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, I have a conversation with Dr. David Hanscom. David's orthopedic spine surgery practice focused on patients with failed back surgeries. He quit his practice in Seattle, Washington to present his insights into solving chronic pain, which evolved from his own battle with it. His book, Back in Control, is associated with an action plan, the DOC Journey, which guides patients in solving mental and physical pain. There is a link to that in the show notes, as well as a link to Back in Control, a surgeon's roadmap out of chronic pain. And Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? Take Control with a Surgeon's Advice. And this book, his latest book, Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? Take Control with a Surgeon's Advice, is intended for healthcare providers and patients alike to make an informed decision about undergoing spinal surgery. And David mentions that in the conversation that we have. I was so excited to have this conversation with Dr. Hanscom. I heard him present at a conference a couple years ago, and ever since I heard him present, I really wanted to talk with him. I followed some of his plan when I had a major head injury, and it helped so much. So I was very grateful for the work that he is doing, and I really think the information will be helpful to some of you as well. So here you are, my conversation with Dr. David Hanscom. Hi, David. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you here. I've been wanting to talk with you for a couple of years now after hearing you at a conference, and you helped me. Your information helped me a lot out of pain from a head injury that I had had. And so I really appreciated your chat at the conference and just following some of your protocols and your plan. And I've wanted to talk to you ever since. So I am delighted to have you on the podcast today.
Fantastic. Well, thank you.
So I would love, if you don't mind, just starting with your journey of being a spinal surgeon for 32 years and then kind of transitioning into the work that you do with chronic pain currently.
Okay. Well, my process has evolved dramatically, so I'd like to work backwards just for a second instead of trying to cover the whole topic in one big swoop here. And that is, I want to say that we find out that chronic pain is a solvable problem, period. I want to ask you about your experience in a second. Most physicians are not trained that way, including myself. I am a major complex spine surgeon. I did spine surgery in Seattle, Washington for about 32 years, and I came out of my spine fellowship with a zeal to solve pain with surgery. And I was doing fusions for back pain. I felt guilty if I could not find a reason to do surgery. Then the data came out that the success rate of a spine fusion for back pain is about 22%. So I go, oh my God. So I just stopped because it's a big operation, lots of complications. So that was 1993. Then in the meantime, I went through a 15-year journey of chronic pain myself. And it started out with a panic attack on the 520 bridge in Seattle. It was about 10 o'clock at night. All of a sudden, my heart started to race. My head started to spin. I started to sweat. And of course, I thought I was having a heart attack. Turned out to be a panic attack. The way I became a major spine surgeon was by suppressing anxiety, suppressing everything. And my nickname for myself and my colleagues was the Brick. And my whole attitude is bring it on, bring it on, bring it on. It turns out that suppressing thoughts and emotions is the essence of chronic pain. So I went from this fearless spine surgeon, and I mean absolutely fearless spine surgeon, to crippling anxiety in one day. once that happened, I could not stop it. So then I went into 13 years of psychotherapy to solve this anxiety thing, because of course I wasn't happy about it. I didn't want to lose my practice. And the harder I tried to get past this thing called anxiety, it got worse. So eventually, jumping way ahead in the story to the last 3 years, I know that anxiety is simply a state, it's a sensation generated by threats or stresses. In other words, when your body's chemistry is in a fight or flight state, you're full of inflammation, your energy consumption's up, you're full of adrenaline and cortisol. And so what happens is that your body is in a hyper alert state. That sensation is what humans call anxiety. It's the same state that my cat has. It's a survival sensation. It's evolved to be incredibly unpleasant. But the key issue is the result of stress. It's not the cause. So by treating anxiety psychologically, it's a huge problem, because what happens is that it's a physiological state. And when I mean the word physiology is how your body functions. And one metaphor I use, or comparison that I use, is that of a parked car, is that a parked car does not have any symptoms. You have to turn the car on. Same thing with your body. It's your blood pressure, heart rate, acid-base balance, your muscle tension. All these things are how your body runs. So basically, when you're in fight or flight or trying to escape danger, why your body has a sensation that humans call anxiety. The key issue with this is that avoiding that sensation drives human behavior to survive, and it's a million times stronger than your conscious brain. It's a million to one ratio. So your unconscious brain processes about 40 million bits of information per second. Your conscious brain processes only 40. So if you're trying to conquer this uncomfortable sensation with conscious means, it's a complete mismatch. So my rhetorical question to you, and I know I'm going fast forward on this topic pretty quickly. So my question to you is that if your unconscious brain is saying danger, you have this sensation that we call anxiety, very uncomfortable. It's not responsive to rational control. How do you decrease anxiety? It's a rhetorical question, by the way. You won't get the answer. But anyway, that's the question I really want your audience to understand, is that if anxiety is simply a hyper alert state of your body's chemistry, not responsive to responsive, and you can't control it, it's automatic and hardwired, how do you lower anxiety? So you simply lower the stress chemistry. In other words, you have two states of physiology. You have fight or flight, and you have rest and digest, or what we call safety physiology. So the essence of all chronic disease, mental and physical, by the way, is the sustained exposure to threat physiology. And the way you heal is that you go into safety physiology. So we call it dynamic healing, that you learn how to process adversity more quickly. In other words, you cannot control anxiety and anger. They are physiological states. So by learning to adjust the physiology from threat to safety is the essence of actually solving anxiety. However, just by solving anxiety and anger actually doesn't give you the life that you want. And the reason for that is called neuroplasticity, is your brain's going to develop wherever you place its attention. So if your attention's always on the problem, problem solving, where's your attention?
On the problem.
So that's what happened to me. I was in crippling anxiety. I went into psychotherapy for 13 solid years, which, again, I'm not against psychotherapy, but your attention's on the problem. So the brain has a property called neuroplasticity. In other words, your brain changes to whatever you're trying to learn next. And so the solution, so the key issue is, if you focus on the problem, you actually reinforce the problem, where you really want to actually move into the life that you want. So as you pursue the vision of what you want your life to look like, that's where your brain develops, and actually where the true healing occurs. Except you can't actually move into the life that you want if you're fighting off anxiety and anger. So you have two parts to healing. One is actually learning how to process anxiety and anger, which means you lower threat physiology. Then you also learn how to nurture joy. But you can't pursue pleasure to counteract the anxiety because it's a mismatch. Again, you have the million to one ratio of the survival reactions compared to your conscious brain. So they're two separate skill sets of learning how to process adversity quickly and efficiently, and learning how to nurture joy, which, by the way, I don't think any of us are really taught how to do that very well. Mm. And so they're separate processes, but they're obviously linked. So joy and anger are mutually exclusive concepts, right?
Right.
So whatever pleasure you're trying to seek in life to counteract this survival reaction is not going to work. The data shows that you're pursuing a life of hedonistic pleasure, your inflammatory markers go straight up. If you pursue life with a sense of passion and purpose, your inflammatory markers go straight down. Mm. But when you're fighting off anxiety and anger, you don't have any space in your brain to do anything. Mm-hmm. So you're reacting and you're reacting and you're reacting. So anyway, that's sort of the basis of how my thing has evolved over the last several years. So I, in 2003, started using the tools that we're talking about today. And I had 17 different symptoms at that. So I had the panic attack that started it, but then my ear started to ring. I had tinnitus. My feet started to burn. I had skin rashes popping up. I had extreme anxiety. I developed a full-blown obsessive compulsive disorder. And I was in very, very bad shape for about 15 years. It was a disaster. So nobody could tell me what was wrong. I, of course, sought all sorts of medical care, being an orthopedic spine surgeon. And I had no hope. And so when I talk to my patients in chronic pain, and maybe you can relate to this a little bit, I call it the abyss. It's very, very dark. The data shows that the effect of chronic pain that has on your life, and again, mental pain is the bigger problem, and we'll discuss that in a second. The effect that chronic pain has on your quality of life has been documented to be equivalent to having terminal cancer. It's that bad. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I jumped through a lot of hoops there. I didn't mean to go forward so quickly, but I'm just curious, you say you had a good experience using some of these concepts. So I'm curious at this point, what's some of your thoughts on what I just talked about?
Yeah, I think some of the things that I learned from hearing you talk at the conference and reading through some of your materials was that I was really focusing on the problem. So I had had a head injury where I was hit in the back of the head. It was a complete accident, but I was my head was slammed in the trunk of the car, which brought me to the floor. And then after that, or the ground. And then after that, I had nerve pain throughout my neck, my anterior neck, down bilaterally both arms and bilaterally into my abdomen. And a lot of shifting and pain in the head. So at first it was intense. And of course it was a head injury. So it was one of the first times in my life that I really experienced depression, which I hadn't really experienced before. But I was also in a state when my head was hit of great anxiety.
Right.
I had been holding my brother many times through something that he's been going through in his life and still is. With him crying in my arms, and he and I are very close, and it was very hard on me. And that's where my mental state was when my head was hit. And then it took about 3 years to get out of pain. I am completely and totally out of all pain. But what really resonated with me that I was absolutely doing, that you had said, stop doing that in your work, was I was talking to my mom about my pain. I was talking to my sister about my pain. I was talking to my voice teacher about my pain. I was constantly talking about pain to all of my loved ones,
right,
who were a wonderful support network. But in your work, it mentions, stop talking about it with your loved ones. Allow your team, your kind of medical team, to be who you talk with about pain, and allow yourself to experience joy with your loved ones. And and then on top of that, at the time, I was the only income for my family. So with being the only income, I had a lot of financial stress, which was a lot of anxiety. And so I also had to, part of honestly what helped me out of my pain was my when my husband got his job, I noticed a lot of my pain started to go away. And I thought, wow, I'm really putting a lot of pressure on myself, creating an internal anxiety that I just didn't even know that I was creating or that I had.
So this is my biggest message to the audience. Is that anxiety is not psychological. Mm. It's a physiological state. Mm-hmm. In other words, your body's under stress. So we tend to think in terms of stress being a psychological issue, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay, it is not. Mm-hmm. So stress is just threats. I mean, you have finances, you have relationships, you have all sorts of things that are threats to your quality of mind. And so it turns out for humans, by the way, that thoughts are your most significant stress. So if you want to break up the word psychology into two parts. So unpleasant thoughts are part of our sensory input as well as other adversity. So let's use the word threat or stress is the word. Then your body processes the information coming from your mind and other circumstances. Then your body's physiology or chemical state goes from safety to fight or flight. So remember, the essence of all chronic disease is sustained fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So we have a model called dynamic healing, where you can, every living creature survives by processing their input or their circumstances. Then you have the nervous system that takes the signals and sends out signals to change your physiology into safety or fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So it happens by talking about your pain, your attention's on the pain, number one. So your nervous system says danger. Then your body goes into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the models. In the dynamic healing model, at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is actually lower your threat physiology. And again, the input, the nervous system, and the output is the dynamic process. So when your stresses, or what the research term is allostatic load, exceeds your coping skills, you go into fight or flight. So the process is very dynamic, because in some days your stresses are just simply high, or other days your nervous system is sort of hyperactive, lack of sleep, etc., that you go into fight or flight. But what you're doing, you're learning tools to regulate your body's physiology. So if you're in a stressed, anxious situation, remember, anxiety is just the word that reflects your chemical state. So if you're under threat or stress, you're agitated, you're high alert. The humans have a word for that called anxiety. It's just a physiological state. Mm-hmm. So this thing about the psyche that's so critical, and what my focus is on this year, is that your thoughts. So if you have physical pain, you withdraw your hand from a hot stove. We call that nociceptive pain. So your body has automatic responses to physical sensations that says danger, and you withdraw. Mm-hmm. But mental pain comes in through the same circuits, has the same physiological response. But we cannot escape our consciousness. We cannot escape our thoughts. Mm. So we have unpleasant thoughts. There's no automatic withdrawal mechanism. And then suppressed thoughts and emotions are more damaged to your body than actually expressed. So whether you experience the thoughts or suppress them, either way, your body's in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So the inability to escape your consciousness, I think, is the essence of all chronic disease. So let's say one more thing that's really critical here. The research shows, clearly at the cellular level, that every chronic disease is the same problem. In other words, anxiety, depression, bipolar, OCD, and schizophrenia are actually all inflammatory disorders, every one of them. Because half your brain is the immune system. There's these cells called glial cells that support the neurons of the brain. They have inflammatory receptors for cytokines, which are small molecules that say inflammation or no inflammation. So half your brain is part of the immune system. So when you're under chronic fight or flight, you're in inflammation. Your brain itself is inflamed. You have increased speed of nerve conduction. Your brain is hypersensitive. You actually physically feel more pain. Mm-hmm. So anxiety, depression, OCD, bipolar, and schizophrenia are all been well documented to be inflammatory disorders. Hmm. So then what's even more impressive is that you cannot escape your thoughts. So again, chronic disease states are from sustained fight or flight. So it turns out that Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, cardiac disease, peripheral vascular disease, diabetes, hypertension, cancer, osteoporosis, autoimmune disorders are all inflammatory states. Mm-hmm. It's all the same problem with the breakdown of the cell at the cellular level. And I won't go into detail with that. But whether it's mental disorders or physical disorders, it's all the same process.
Mm. Creating inflammation within Correct. The system.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not inflammation, but your whole is a word called metabolism. Mm-hmm. It's how your body consumes fuel. So when you're in fight or flight, you're actually consuming resources in your body. In other words, you're breaking down your body to create glucose to actually run your body. Mm-hmm. So what happens So I've known since medical school that chronic stress causes disease. So I never could figure that out. I'm going, well, wait a second. There's acute stress that seems to be really stressful, but it's been shown for 50 or 60 years over and over and over again, just that chronic stress every day is what tears down your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting to me how many people I meet or come into my clinic that don't recognize that they're under chronic stress. They don't recognize they're under chronic stress until they experience some kind of pain or some kind of breakdown or really having it get to a level where the body says, listen to me or stop right. what you're doing.
Right. Well, I mean, here's what happened to me is I just didn't know this. I wish I'd been trained a lot earlier, is that if you think about this carefully, we all learned this in high school, that we're in fight or flight. When you're in fight or flight, your body's consuming resources to stay alive. So we know about adrenaline causing heart rate and sweating, et cetera. And somehow medicine has gone to a structural model for disease, and they use a term called medically unexplained symptoms, which is absolutely untrue. Everything's wrong. Your whole body's full of fight or flight chemistry. Every cell is bathed in an adverse chemical environment because it's a survival environment. But you have to rest and regenerate in order to fight another day. So you just have to so you can't control your anxiety and frustration. They're automatic hardwired responses, but you can reprogram them. You can reprogram your brain to respond differently to stress. So I don't use the word mind-body anymore because it's just a unit. In other words, you can't fly a Boeing jet without a computer. You cannot run the human body without a nervous system. Mm. So your nervous system is just processing the environment. Again, that's the input. Then you have the state of your nervous system and the output. And with dynamic healing, we teach people how to process stress differently so it has less impact on your nervous system. You can increase the resiliency of your nervous system with exercise, diet, and sleep. Then there's ways with breath work and music, et cetera, that allows you to directly lower your stress physiology from fight or flight to safety. So there's a bunch of ways of doing this. And so I've been excited about it because I had 17 different symptoms. Every one of them is gone. So I had ringing in my ears, burning in my feet, skin rashes, migraine headaches, anxiety, depression, full-blown OCD, among 17 different symptoms. They are all gone. And my patients and clients that heal, the symptoms disappear. So remember, in fight or flight, you're consuming resources and you get sick. When you learn how to regulate your body's physiology into safety, you actually physically heal. You heal. I mean, it's not some type of imaginary, bypass this. You're actually connecting to the body's own capacity to heal. And people say, well, that sounds miraculous. Well, it actually is, because life is miraculous. I mean, the complexity of the human body is incredible. The fact that the body can heal itself is, I think, miraculous. As an orthopedic surgeon, I watch people with fractured femurs and arms and all sorts of stuff. Think what the human existence would be like if you didn't heal your bones. Mm. So the body's capacity to heal, I think, is miraculous. And the body knows how to heal. So again, when your body, including the nervous system, is in a rest and digest state, your body actually increases the size of the neurons. We know, for instance, in chronic pain, your brain physically shrinks. When you treat chronic pain, it physically re-expands. So what you're doing, you're literally causing your body to completely change its reception of stress. you actually put your body into a safety state more than a threat state, and your body not only heals, it actually regenerates.
I love all of that so much. I think it's so important, and part of what I just loved so much about me kind of being introduced to your work and that reprogramming, or I call it our coping mechanisms. So how we've learned to cope throughout our childhood, and then as we start to become adults, and then that we can change that, we can reprogram how we take in different stress, or our how we respond to different stressors.
Right. Now, you just nailed it. So I'm curious, in your experience, what was the tipping point for you where you started to heal? What do you think was the concept or what you actually did that seemed to start your healing process? Because again, your story is common. Mm-hmm. People say, oh, that's not going to happen to me. The answer is it is. To me, the only block to healing is simply unwillingness to engage or not engaging enough. In other words, it's like becoming a professional at living your life. It takes repetition to learn how to process adversity, which is one skill set. It's another skill set to nurture joy, which is where the real healing occurs. Again, you can't nurture joy while you're fighting off anxiety and anger. Anger and joy are mutually exclusive terms, and they happen every day. I mean, this is a process that happens every day. You do it enough times, it becomes automatic. So you simply spend less time in fight or flight and more time in safety. So it transforms your brain. It transforms your entire life. And it is really remarkable. People really do go to pain-free. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, in your situation, what was the tipping point for you? What seemed to make your symptoms resolve?
Yeah, I think there were two. One was when I had heard you say, stop talking to your personal family and friends. And so as soon as I stopped doing that, I wasn't telling myself that something was wrong with me all the time. I wasn't giving my brain that satisfaction of continuously hearing that something was wrong or that I was broken.
Right.
And then I think the second one was recognizing that there was nothing outside putting stressors on me. It was truly my own mind or my own anxiety saying, it's all me. I have the responsibility of taking care of my family. And if I don't do it, then it's going to fall apart. And, you know, trying to maintain that financial stress. And then I finally went, hang on a second. It's not just me. And it's not just, you know, if something were to happen, we would get by and I have support. My husband would get a job, and he did, but my husband would get a job and we have family support around us. And so recognizing that I was actually keeping myself in a state of feeling that way in more than one way. I mean, I think I was also like, I'm important. And what I do is, it was a way of validating myself. And yet it was one of the greatest stressors. And when I was able to recognize that within myself and say, okay, hang on, I am enough without having to prove it to my nervous system and stressing my nervous system out.
Right. So what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, just to talk about the doc journey that I put together.
I'd love it. Yeah.
So here's what happened. I broke out of chronic pain in 2003. I moved back to Seattle. This all happened in Sun Valley, Idaho. And I moved back to Seattle, and I assumed that my psychologist and physiatry rehab friends would actually take care of this process for me. Because in Sun Valley, I was doing it basically by myself, watching my patients get better. But when I get back to Seattle, I realized that nobody was doing anything, because again, we weren't trained that way. So in my colleague's defense, I would have no insights into what we're talking about today unless I had gone through my own 15-year journey. So in 2006, I started sharing the tools with patients. I tried lots of things that didn't work. Lots of things started to work. And by 2009, I understood the whole process that the body chemistry is off. You can get multiple symptoms from one process, because every organ system is just different manifestation of the stress physiology. Then in 2019, I met a Dr. Stephen Porges, who wrote a book on the polyvagal theory. So he and I run a scientific roundtable that meets twice a month, that actually goes deeply into the neuroscience behind all this stuff. And now, understanding the role of the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, and running your body's physiology, we have a really clear idea what's going on. So I published my first book in 2012, which is pretty limited compared to my second book in 2016 called Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap About a Chronic Pain. And it basically presents my story, the different parts of pain, etc. But I didn't know the physiology of them. So once I started talking to Dr. Portis, I developed an app called the DLC Journey, Direct Your Own Care Journey. So we have an app and we have a course, which is computer-based. And they're based on the sequence of actually starting with acknowledging your pain, but also acknowledging your suffering, but also acknowledging, embracing your doubt and skepticism. Because what you're trying to do is connect your own body's capacity to heal. So that means to connecting with what is, and healing is miraculous, like we said. But you can't, it's not about generating positive thinking, believe in David Hanscom or believe in the Doc Journey or Stephen Porges or anybody. It's about connecting to you. So the Doc Journey has a sequence, both the app and the course, have a sequence of starting slowly, calming down the nervous system, going through the solutions behind chronic pain, the principles, then it goes into anxiety, awareness, and anger. Then the last two legs are about reprogramming your brain, just like a professional athlete, to become skilled at processing adversity and nurturing joy. So it's very self-directed. I do coaching twice a week in a group setting on Tuesdays and Thursdays at noon Pacific time. And it's a group setting. We have a really nice time. It's didactic. And based on what you just said, which has been a hard and fast rule of all of our workshops, is just you cannot discuss your pain. So it's a little bit didactic. We go into little things people have learned to do it. But with engagement, whatever version of it you decided to use, it's a self-directed process and you take control. And as you keep reprogramming and reprogramming your brain, it becomes automatic. This is not a lot of work. And life becomes much, much easier on the other side. So I'll ask you a leading question is that one of the benefits of suffering pretty darn severely is you get to really appreciate life on the other side. So it's been incredibly rewarding. I quit my practice in 2018 because I was seeing so many people badly damaged by spine surgery and so many people really healing deeply using the principles we talked about now based on physiology that I just couldn't do it anymore. So I'm doing what I can do to bring these concepts into the world. My personal goal is to get medicine back on a basis that physiology is what causes symptoms, not structural problems. And that we learn this in high school, in college, and certainly medical school, we actually know this. So I don't know why we've turned our back on it and gone so far off track. But my message to you is that chronic pain, mental and physical, is a solvable problem.
Yes. Thank you for that. And if you don't mind just talking a little bit, we'll talk about how, as you mentioned, that it's a physiological state. And so when I talk about pain, obviously I'm looking at working through someone or looking at someone's biomechanics. And when someone says, oh, I have this problem or that problem, or I have a lumbar disc herniation, or I have a cervical disc herniation, and I'll note that. But to me, it's not about the quote tissue damage. It's about the movement and overall what's happening in the system, in our brilliant body. How is our brilliant body moving? How is it functioning? What's happening? What are the other stressors? So I love everything that you've said. And obviously, as a spinal surgeon for many, many years, how tissue damage, something like disc herniations, does not quote equal pain. And that many people, you could take MRIs of spines and many people would have disc herniations by the time they get to a certain age that might not be causing any pain or any discomfort whatsoever. And then you might have some others who are.
Well, but see, here's the thing. The correlation is zero. In other words, at age 65, 100% of people have degenerative changes, either ruptured disc, bulging disc, bone spurs, arthritis. It's been clearly documented that disc degeneration is not a cause of back pain, period. Just is not. Yeah, we're doing $20 billion a year. So the better term would be normally aging spines. So I did write a book called Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? If somebody's considering doing surgery on you, I'm not against surgery. If you can see the problem, what I'm mightily against is doing surgery on normally aging spines that have been documented to not be a source of pain, yet we're doing something like $20 billion a year of spine surgery on normally aging spines. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actively hurting people pretty badly because there's a tremendous downside to failed spine surgery. It was really not talked about is that the results of a failed spine surgery borderline catastrophic. It's unbelievable. So I quit my practice. I'm watching people heal with no risk, minimal resources, and I'm watching people badly damaged by surgeries costing tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars, badly, badly damaged with lives being consistently destroyed. So I that's when I finally quit.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I am so grateful to have you on, and from your all of your information of the 32 years of doing spinal surgeries and then through your own pain and processing and learning a way out for yourself and for thousands of patients now that you see. We're so grateful. I'm so grateful for the work that you do and for having you come on and talk to us about pain and chronic pain and the physiological state. And I'd love, you know, for the listeners, please check out Dr. David Hanscom's work, the DOC program that was mentioned, the app, two different books, Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain, the second edition, and Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? Take Control with a Surgeon's Advice. David, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation with me. I am so grateful.
Hey, I'm really happy to be able to share the idea. So thank you very much.
Thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, tell your colleagues, students, and friends. Subscribe, rate, and please write a review. You can find us on Instagram or Facebook, and feel free to check out my website at www.theVisceralVoice.com for information on programs and upcoming events. I hope you join us next time for another wonderful conversation on The Visceral Voice.